It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes, Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one. Down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Medow.
And welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live here on this Wednesday morning. So glad you could join us alongside John Schmelk. I'm Lance Medow. We're taking your phone calls for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, number sign Giants Chat.
And pound Giants
Yes,
Chat.
However you want to call that symbol, as we like to say, in the social media world.
Well, recently learned Lance is somewhat symbol deficient.
Yes, I need to study up on some of these symbols.
Well, we were going over some of Lance's text messages. And,
oh, boy,
and
this is going to get...
And somebody gave, you know, like the smiley face with like the P, where it's like you're sticking your tongue out, like you're joking around. And Lance had never heard of the stick your tongue out smiley face, which I thought was odd.
All my years on this world, never saw that. I know the typical smiley face, never knew the P stood for something else.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Apparently.
You learn something new every day.
Oh, boy, did I learn something new.
I just want to know why Meroy's sending you, you know, tongue-out smiley faces. It's a little weird.
We want to keep things behind closed doors, yeah, you know, away kidding. From the Giants public. But the question today, for those of you who want to maybe send those peace symbols out to us on Twitter, is what the Giants should do with respect to their free agent wide receiver core, Dominic Hixon, Ramsey Barden among that group. Obviously, Akiem Nix and Victor Cruz still under contract, but they need to determine how they want to approach extensions with both of those wide receivers, as Cruz is a restricted free agent, so they will have the right to match, but clearly they want to lock him up. Akiem Nix is still under contract for another year, so feel free to give us your opinions on that big topic throughout the course of the show. You could chime in on the lines. You could chime in on Twitter. Want to hear your thoughts. And Dominic Hixon, John, probably the most notable free agent of the group in terms of the unrestricted free agents, given his track record with the Giants and what he's able to have been able to contribute over the last couple of seasons. He's been up and down in terms of his injuries, but you know, this was a year where they brought him back into the special teams fold, and when he was called upon to fill in for Akiem Nix and had to step into even that number two wide receiver spot, you know, he made some big plays. To me, the one game that stands out is that Eagles contest in Philadelphia. Made a couple of key grabs on the sidelines to help keep drives alive. And if the price is right, he certainly is a valuable commodity that they don't necessarily want to lose.
Hey, and he's valuable in so many different ways. He's not only good as a wide receiver, he knows the system, he's familiar with Kevin Gilbride's offense, he has a good relationship with Eli Manning, he's a professional wide receiver that does what needs to be done on the field, and he rarely, if ever, runs the wrong route. In addition to that, he's also a valuable player on special teams. And if next year you're looking for Reuben Randle to play a much bigger role on offense, and perhaps David Wilson is going to get the majority of your carries running the ball week in, week out, you're going to need a guy like Dominic Hixon to step in, not only in the punt return game, which he did at the end of this season and did it pretty successfully, also perhaps in the kick return game, where Dominic Hixon has had some level of success as a kick returner. So to me, it's a no-brainer to bring him back as maybe your fourth or third wide receiver, depending on how Reuben Randle develops, depending on how Akiem Nix gets back in terms of his health. And then, of course, you could use him on special teams as well.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly a big plus for the Giants to have another guy that they can use who has that versatility to contribute on special teams. And I don't think that they moved him right back into it immediately because they were concerned about his injury history. You know, he had trouble staying on the field game in and game out over the last couple of seasons. This was the first season where he pretty much was able to, you know, withstand the 16-game schedule and contribute each and every week. So I think that was a big positive. And we actually already have some people chiming in on Twitter with respect to this topic of what the Giants should do regarding their free agents at wide receiver. And our good friend Big Bluviator, which I got right today, so a
well
plus
done
for me there. Got to keep Cruz, negotiate Nix. Randle becomes the number three. If Hixon is at the right price, the number four, and Barden they don't use, so certainly they don't necessarily have to bring him back. Then at M Farmer 20, keep Hixon as long as it's cheap, cut Ramsey's. So now all of a sudden, everybody not on the Ramsey's Barden bandwagon.
Well, Ramsey's Barden, first of all, they wouldn't have to cut him. He is a free agent this year, so the Giants will have to make a decision on him whether or not they're going to want to bring him back at a low price. Obviously, another guy that's a smart football player, knows the offense, knows what he's doing. But looking at the other wide receiver that I think is an issue, and guys, we see the phone calls all lined up. The lines are full, so we'll get to those calls in just a second. But just to note, Victor Cruz is a restricted free agent. So obviously the Giants, if these reports that you see out there are correct, are in a negotiating process with him, trying to sign him to a long-term deal, which I think everybody in the Giants organization and on Victor Cruz's side wants to happen. So in my opinion, that'll happen probably sooner rather than later. And if you're a Giant fan, I would not worry about Victor Cruz leaving at any point anytime soon.
As I threw out earlier in the week, aside from trying to re-sign Will Beatty, I think locking up Victor Cruz is probably up there in terms of the top two priorities for the Giants this offseason. All right, we're going to open up the lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, and we start with Stan in New Jersey. Stan, what's happening?
How you doing? Good morning. How are you?
Morning, Stan.
Just by listening to you guys and knowing I've been a Giant fan since 1966.
Nice.
Just watching this year compared to last year when they won the Super Bowl, they had the same core, but it seemed like in the middle of the season there was something missing, which was the fight and everything. And again, their wide receiver core is good. Back in the 70s we never had that. Back in the 80s or late 80s we never had this core that they have. It's just the idea with this kid Randall. That's the problem with the Giants. When they get somebody, they don't use him right away. Bring him in. Other teams put these rookies in. You don't know until you play them. Now, you don't know what he's going to do next year, but it'll help. With Cruz as number one now, who's considered number one, Hicks, and then you got Hixon, and you got you take care of him, bring him in, maybe get another wide receiver, whatever. Again, their offense has got to click again like last year. And, you know, basically they lost it. I think they were like sleeping. Again, they fell asleep because they were Super Bowl champs. They said, "Oh, we have this. We're going to make the playoffs. It's easy." No, it's not. You got to be hungry every year. So I'm looking at Zarandl. I saw him the last game. I know it was only one game, but I think you got to give the kid a shot. And that's my opinion. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Stan, appreciate the call, man. And I think one thing they were missing midseason, especially in regards to the wide receiver, is Hakeem Nicks with two healthy legs. I think that a knee obviously hampered him all year. We've talked about it. That really took a dynamic out of that Giants offense where they depend on those two explosive wide receivers to draw double teams, and then you make plays down the field because you can't double both of them. One guy will get singled up. Hakeem Nicks couldn't beat that single coverage this year. In terms of Reuben Randall, I know I've heard this complaint before from fans about him not getting enough playing time, not just throwing him in there and letting him do his thing. I frankly think Reuben Randall got a pretty good opportunity this year to play. Maybe not as a starter, but he was in there as a third wide receiver an awful lot the second half of the year. I don't have his snaps per games in front of me, but I promise you he probably got 15, 20 snaps a game on offense every game the last 8 games of the year. He was out there plenty.
I thought Randall definitely had some opportunities. You look back at the Cleveland Browns game, led the team in receiving. Stan just brought up the last game with the Eagles. And remember, like David Wilson, John, you know, they moved him along slowly because there was also questions earlier in the season about his work ethic and whether or not he was digesting the playbook. So it wasn't as if he came in as a second-round pick and they were like, you know what, Reuben? You automatically have this third wide receiver job locked down, and we're going to throw you into the mix. It was a learning curve, like every other rookie. And as he got more and more opportunities, he showed the coaches that they should have some confidence in him, that he can be put in positions and succeed. And that's why I think you need to look at this season as a whole, say there were some flashes that Reuben Randall showed. But he still has a lot to prove. And I think this is a critical offseason with respect to mini camps and OTAs for him to continue to gain the confidence of the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think you made a great point why you didn't just throw Reuben Randall in there. It was pretty clear. I think it was after about week 3 or 4 of the regular season when you heard players in the locker room, Victor Cruz being one of them, Kevin Gilbride being another, where they basically came out and said, look, Reuben Randall could focus a little bit more. Reuben Randall could be better in the offense. Reuben Randall could, I believe, act more like a professional, I think was thrown out there, that expression, if memory serves me right. So clearly a message had to be sent to the young wide. And Eli Manning said something as well. A message had to be sent to the young wide receiver. It wasn't a rip job. It was subtly done through the media, where I guess it was honest criticism. And based on what was said by the coordinator, the coaches, the players, after the season, there was a significant amount of growth from Randall from that point, when his teammates and coaches had to frankly call him out a little bit, to the end of the season, where when head coach Tom Coughlin addressed the media in his season-ending press conference, said he thought Reuben Randall made a ton of progress over the course of the year and should be able to contribute and be a big-time wide receiver next year for Big Blue.
Yeah, Tom Coughlin, those were one of the topics that he addressed in his final press conference, as well as that interview that he had with Mike Francesa on WFAN. Yep. And Chris Collinsworth also, I believe, on the Sunday night broadcast was talking about Reuben Randall, and that's where that whole storyline started to pick up throughout the course of the season. And, you know, credit to him, he took some of that criticism and used that as motivation to improve as an individual both on and off the field. And, you know, the other thing that I had brought up throughout the course of this season on this show, he never really played with a top-notch quarterback at LSU, which was known for its passing game. They were known for its defense. They were known for their running game. Now he's with Eli Manning. That's not a bad thing for a young rookie. That is good for his development because he's going to be working with an experienced quarterback who certainly likes to lean on throwing the football. All right, we're going to go back to the lines. We've got a good friend, Vic, in Connecticut. Vic, what's happening?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing well, Vic.
Hey, listen, just a quick comment. I caught the show yesterday, wasn't able to call in, but you made a comment, John, I think it was you, on Mark Ross and leaving, you know, the brass leaving and how they have to give opportunities to the Giants, you know, to get better opportunities.
Yeah.
And then I think you mentioned something about taking a job in Seattle. The opportunity.
Here we go. This is going to get good now.
Yeah, so I think I could be wrong, but I have this piece of paper in front of me that says there's some breaking news off the Fox Wire report.
Oh, boy. What do we got?
And I quote, Fox Sports is reporting that John Schmelk has been traded with his approval to a Seattle radio station, WOMG, for one used copy of Sleepless in Seattle and a retired broadcaster to be named later.
Now, here's the thing. If I were the Giants in that situation, I would want a throwback Steve Largent jersey. For one, I think you would want to get that back in the trade. And how about maybe like a year's supply of Starbucks, something else that you can bring back? I think you get a little bit more value from me than a used copy of Sleepless in Seattle. Is that DVD or Blu-ray, Vic?
I think it's Blu-ray, just okay. To say it a little bit. Yeah,
Very good.
But it does go on to say that the news is on the heels of Mr. Schmelk hinting on his internet show that he would accept the job. Now, it does one last sentence before I get to the wide receivers.
Sure,
it does
Vic.
Say that John's partner on the show, Lance Meadow, comments, I think the trade brings great value to both sides. Well, at least I think it does for Big Blue anyway. He said he has no more comment and he has begun reading Sleepless in Seattle and wearing his number favorite 13 Rams' Barton fleece.
Okay, very good. Very nice.
Very good. Very nice.
So that's for yesterday, anyway.
Thanks, Vic.
But anyway, back to the receivers.
Sure.
The rest of the callers. I agree. You know, you got Nick Cruz, extend him. Nick's, it's a prove-it year like Kiwanuka. Reuben Randall, he's got to be a solid three and looking to be a two if Nick's can't do it. And Hickson, I love. He's an all-purpose guy. He can almost be a one if he needs to be. Barton, you know, I think he's probably gone. And Jernigan, I think, is probably on the edge a little bit. I think special teams keeps him alive in a lot of ways, and maybe with David Wilson doing some more backfield work next year, maybe he gets a little bit more look there. I happen to like a couple guys. I like Brandon Collins. I saw a little bit. I go to camp every year. Dan DePalma, I really like, and I'm really sorry that we lost David Douglas.
Yeah, to Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
that was a shame because he looked great last year.
Agreed.
I think the wild card is maybe Travis Beckham a little bit. He's 6'3"-ish. He's not a real big guy. He's not really a tight end. He's kind of a hybrid. And I think that if he can stay healthy again, you know, maybe he can help in a 3-4 wide receiver set, and maybe he can play a little bit of the catching tight end while Martellus Bennett hopefully plays a little bit of the blocking tight end.
Well, Vic, Beckham is an unrestricted free agent here, so that's one of the guys the Giants are going to have to make a decision on in the offseason if they want to bring him back or go somewhere else with that second and third tight end spot.
I think just kind of closing, I think the Giants are going to be solid at the top, 1, 2, 3, 4, but I think they're going to take a really hard look at the next, you know, 4, 5, and 6, and I think street free agents and draft choices will come into play. I think they're looking to really refresh this offense a little bit after the top guys, but I guess we'll see what happens. But thanks for giving me the time to give you a hard time. And
Vic, we love it. Anytime you want to call up and give Lance or I a hard time, feel free.
Thanks a lot, Vic. Appreciate it. And by the way, we do have the clips of Vic giving it to Paul DeTino.
This is not the first time Vic has called up and and gone after a host of Big Blue Kickoff Live. It was just last week, I believe.
It was.
When Paul, earlier in the show, or was it the show the day before, gave it a really hard time to a caller that didn't like, I think it was a anti-Perry Fuel call, if
I remember. It was Galati who started off the show.
Galati in New Jersey.
Paul, very chippy, very dismissive. And then the next day, Vic obviously heard how he treated the callers, so Vic returned the favor.
Let's take a listen.
We go back to the lines. We've got Vic in Connecticut. Vic, what's happening?
Good morning, everybody. I'm not sure what the question of the day is. I thought it was, at the beginning of the show, I thought it was about Paul's mood.
That is always a topic of conversation, Vic, and I commend you for bringing
Lance interrupting and not letting Vic go.
This is not about me and
typical me.
I prepared for the last 20 minutes on hold, so, you got to give me my due here a little bit, Paul.
All right, brother, what you got?
So Paul's mood, I don't know. It's a little more controversial than David Wilson, it seems, at this point. Paul has a little separation anxiety, from the season, so
it's
I think that plays into
he
a
did, he
bit.
Did.
Or maybe
it's accurate.
Maybe it's a case of some bad eggplant. I'm not sure.
Bad eggplant.
Well, Paul claims to be an Italian food connoisseur. He's not.
Among his many other talents.
Yes. I have him foaming at the mouth right now, Vic. He's speechless. This is lovely. I'm enjoying every second of this while this show is still on the air.
I love Paul. I think he does a great job, and statistically, he's the man. So, when you get a chance to take a little bit of a shot, why not? Plus, if he's not back tomorrow, I won't have to pay the price. So,
there you go. Vic in Connecticut. We've had that in the bank for a couple of days. I wanted a reason to play it back. Vic called, gave me
stuff. Perfect segue.
It was perfect.
He's in the archives
forever. That's why this show's fun, though. We can go back and forth with the callers, give each other a hard time, have a good time, have some laughs, and,
Can't complain about that, especially in the offseason.
Power walk the stress away after the show's over.
And Vic, just getting back to the topic at hand here today, touching on some of the wide receivers that didn't necessarily make the roster or weren't in the mix. And, the Giants had a lot of depth in training camp, John, where it was some tough decisions that they had to look at in terms of who's going to make the team, who's going to not make the team, and David Douglas was one of them. But who's to say that somebody else doesn't emerge this offseason that they really like and may even make the roster?
Well, a guy like Brandon Collins might be back in the mix. Dan DePalma's going to be back in the mix. He was on the practice squad towards the end of the season. David Douglas, as Vic mentioned, got poached by Tampa Bay off the Giants practice squad. I'm sure Mike Sullivan using some of his old Giants contacts there to find a wide receiver that could be useful down the road as a developmental type guy. But look, this scouting staff is very good at finding guys, not necessarily off the street, but maybe guys that aren't drafted or not drafted high that can be effective at wide receiver. So they'll try to do that again, of course, this year.
And Dominic Hickson, probably the best example. Remember, he was cut by the Denver Broncos, and the Giants did their homework and wound up claiming him.
Right.
So that was clearly a perfect example of a good find by
waived.
The Giants. Yeah. That was after that bad collision with the Bills player, who I believe was paralyzed at the time. I'm not exactly sure of the status of that other player right now, but Dominic Hickson was definitely affected from a mental perspective. A lot of teams were scared away from that situation.
And it's funny, looking at Dominic Hickson, he's not like a big guy. He's one of the slimmer, I guess, for lack of a better word, guys in the team. He's in great shape. He's just not doesn't have a very big frame. And if I recall correctly, and I'll try to double-check this right now, I think the player that he had that collision with ended up recovering, and I think he's okay. But I'll look it up for you.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Mark in New Jersey. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, I'm just calling to talk about the wide receiver situation.
Sure.
How I feel the Giants should take care of it. It's going to all come down to money and how much they can spend. And I think the Giants should take a look at the available free agents and compare them to the guys you have that you had to re-sign. And at my point, I as much as I like Hickson, he has been injured a lot. I would not spend a lot of money on him because he's an injury risk. Do you want to spend so much money on somebody that may not be on the field a lot, where maybe you can take a free agent that is more likely to play?
I don't think you're going to have to give Hickson a lot of money, though. I don't think you're going to get it necessarily at the league minimum. But I think considering his knowledge of the offense and his ability to play special teams, I think if you pay him on the lower end of the pay scale, I think you're probably getting pretty decent value there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because there's one guy that I know is a free agent that I think would fit in perfectly with the Giants if they can get him.
Who's that?
Julian Edelman from New England. He's a great slot receiver, and they're probably going to bring back Wes Welker, so that might leave him open to be signed by another team. and I don't think he's going to get a lot of money. He's going to get, you know, he's a third or fourth wide receiver.
Right.
And he has proven he can play well.
All right, well, thanks for weighing in, Mark. Greatly appreciate it. Julian Edelman, sort of like a Wes Welker, does contribute on special teams, right, too.
Smaller guy, slot receiver, obviously. Remember, though, you like to use Victor Cruz in the slot a lot. So I think if you bring a guy like Edelman in, and you would use him more as your fourth guy to play in the slot. Because when you go to those three wide receiver sets, generally, you want to move Victor Cruz inside. And I think Mike Farmer made this point on Twitter earlier. You can send your Twitter comments and questions in the hashtag Giants Chat. That next year, ideally in three wide receiver sets, you'll have Randall and Nix outside and Victor Cruz inside. And I think that's definitely the way to go. You got two big plays, guys that can take you deep down the field, and then Victor Cruz has all that room in the middle of the field to do some damage.
And you would hope that with both of them healthy, Hakeem Nix and Ruben Randall, it will open up opportunities for Victor Cruz throughout the course of the middle of the field.
And obviously the Giants would love to bring back Dominic Hickson, but they see a player they think is superior and better value via free agency. Putting names aside for a moment, they'll certainly pursue that guy. However, I do think it gives Hickson a leg up that he's familiar with the offense. Eli Manning always has nothing but great things to say about him. He has a good rapport with the quarterback. He's a great teammate. Works his rear end off, has come back from two ACLs already, and he's still a very good player. So I think all things being equal between two players, I think they'll give the edge to Hickson just because he's familiar with what's going on here.
And this also gets back to another point we touched on, the fact that he plays special teams, John. I think if they're going to look at a third or fourth wide receiver, that player has to play special teams. They're not just coming on so they could play, you know, 15 to 20 snaps a game and then call it a contest. They're going to need them to contribute, whether it be on the punt return team or the kickoff return team. So whoever they bring in, and I know Mark threw out Julian Edelman, I mean, we could sit here and speculate about a lot of names, but if you're going to throw out a wide receiver or the Giants are even going to experiment with the possibility of bringing in that type of player, they have to contribute on special teams. And this also relates to Hickson's status on Twitter. Our good friend at Marcus Erickson claiming that he thinks Hickson is going to get some additional money on the free agent market. I think he'll be offered more elsewhere than we can offer a third or a fourth wide receiver like the Manningham situation. It will all depend on how the market plays out.
I remember his value is higher, like we mentioned earlier, because of his ability to contribute on special teams as well. By the way, I looked it up. The player he collided with, I believe he was on the Bills at the time,
yes.
Kevin Everett.
Okay.
He has recovered. He seems to have made a full recovery from that spinal cord injury. So that obviously a very positive thing.
And I remember at the time, you know, Hickson was affected just as much as Everett. So it's nice to see that Everett is fully recovered. And Hickson certainly dealing with his own injuries over the last couple of years has also shown some resilience regarding him. All right, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. We go to Dave in Rochester. Dave, what's happening?
Good morning, fellas. I just want to say, Paul Latino, if you're listening, we love you here in Rochester.
Oh, we love Paul, but the only thing we love more than Paul is giving Paul a hard time.
That's right. That's right. Hey, I wanted to talk about Ramses Barden, but I might change it up. I told your screener I want to talk about wide receivers, but it seems like
sure.
You covered it already.
Nah, whatever you want to talk about, that's fine.
I don't want to bore the crowd listening, but
impossible.
Johnny, you remember a couple years ago, when we had Eyes and Insight, every show really was about Ramses Barden.
Yeah, that is correct.
I mean, we went weeks and weeks talking about it, and I think part of that is because after the 08 season, we were all Plexico Burris happy, and, you know, Ramses was big, and we kind of had, you know, we kind of wanted that to come back.
Can't
so
teach height.
That's why, in their defense, and I think I kind of fell into that group too, where we were hoping maybe he was the next Plexico.
Right.
And I think we're kind of done with him and Travis Beckham. I mean, I just wanted to get your opinion, what you guys thought. I mean, I think Ramses, in the 4 years he's been around, he's only got like 400 yards. Travis Beckham in his 4 years only has like 260 yards. Is it worth it to keep these guys, I guess, is my first question. And then my second one was you kind of talked about it the other day about the front line only having, what, 33 sacks a season. What kind of went down with that, just to get your opinion?
Yeah, you know what? And Mark mentioned it earlier, and he was worried about, you know, giving Dominic Hickson money because of the injuries. And really, when you look at it, in my opinion, Dave, the reason you haven't gotten as much out of the Travis Beckhams and Ramses Bardens is also because of injury. Every time these guys step up, play well in a game, they're out the next game. They're always in and out of the lineup. They never are consistently healthy. They don't consistently play. And it's very difficult to have a guy get chemistry with the quarterback, be a big permanent part of your offense, when he simply cannot stay healthy on a consistent basis. And we've seen that with Barden, and even more so than Barden, we've seen it with Beckham, who's been hurt year in, year out.
And you know, I mean, you feel bad for the guy, but maybe it's time to cut those ties. Maybe we need to get a guy, off whatever and spend that money somewhere else, I guess, is just my thought.
And they'll definitely have an opportunity to weigh those decisions. I'd appreciate the phone call, Dave, because both of them are free agents. So it's not as if they need to necessarily cut ties with them. They're not on the books as of right now. So if the Giants feel that they can improve and find somebody else on the market or draft somebody, you know, they'll have the roster space to do that. They'll have the flexibility.
Hey, though, you guys can call about the tight ends, too. We haven't touched on that quite yet, Lance. And I want to touch on that right now. The Giants right now have no tight ends on their contract. Martellus Bennett, Dare Pasco, and Travis Beckham, all free agents. So the Giants, if they want, and they can find the money to do it with their salary cap situation, they can completely revamp that tight end position if they so choose. Now, obviously, the way Coach Coughlin and Kevin Gilbride runs their offense, the Giants need tight ends that know how to block. And Martellus Bennett was a good blocker this year, but in his year-end press conference, what is the one thing Coach Coughlin said about Martellus Bennett? He has to finish his blocks better. So clearly, there was something lacking there that maybe, from watching the games on television, being in the building and not watching the game film, that we can't see. I have to trust what Coach Coughlin says. He wouldn't have said that without a purpose. That being said, I believe Martellus Bennett will be back here. I think there's a decent chance Bear Pasco is back here, but I think you might see another tight end brought in. That depends, though, on the progress of Adrian Robinson, who was a fourth-round pick last year. He was very raw in Cincinnati, where he was really never asked to go out for passes. He was a blocker, and that's it. So the Giants will have to decide whether or not he's made enough progress in 1 year here in the system, in the classroom, to be the Giants' number two tight end next year.
The tight end position, to me, goes hand-in-hand with the offensive line, John. Depending on what happens with the free agents on the O-line and who they mix and match, they may need a lot of double tight end formations next season, where they're going to need two or three tight ends to rotate constantly to serve as that sixth additional offensive lineman. And Adrian Robinson certainly enters the conversation from that perspective. Remember, he graduated late, so he had to catch up with all of his coursework. He missed a lot of training camp. So by the time that he came here, they were about 2 or 3 weeks in, and he was first opening up the playbook. So he was playing catch-up pretty much the entire season. That's why we didn't have a chance to see much of Robinson.
Yeah, and I think you hope that in this year's OTA program, this year's minicamp, off-season team activities, you know, the weight and conditioning program, the Giants see some progress from Adrian Robinson, and you hope that he can be your number two tight end next year, and then you gotta decide if you want to bring back Martellus Bennett or you want to go a different direction.
Jerry Reese even spoke very highly of Robinson, too, that they think that he has some potential, but it's all about whether or not he could get on the football field, digest the playbook, and gain the confidence of the coaching staff, just like a Reuben Randall and a David Wilson. He's certainly in the conversation. And, you know, this script is nothing new, John. Last season, they had guys under contract, but the tight end position was a big question mark, remember. Jake Ballard and Beckham both hurt in the Super Bowl. You know, Bear Pasco's certainly in the mix. Martellus Bennett was not in the conversation at this time last year. So they certainly had to experiment with regard to that position.
Yep.
And they'll have to answer a lot of questions at that same position this season. It's been a revolving door at the tight end spot ever since a guy like Jeremy Shockey left. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Ray John in Newark. Ray John, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Ray John? What you got?
Is it me? I'm just starting to feel like the only person in the world that's not blaming Perry Few for the defense sucking like that. Everybody asks why JPP and Tuck and them didn't have enough sacks this year. Well, I don't know if you noticed or not, when our cornerbacks are out there, they're like 20 yards off their best wide receivers. So you're giving their receivers enough time to gain their speed, and they're running right past our cornerbacks.
Rajon, hold on 1 second. In that Ravens game, Corey Webster was playing press tight, bump and run coverage on Torrey Smith the entire game, and the pass rush didn't get a whiff of Joe Flacco. Not a whiff.
One game. Look at the whole season. If you're playing press coverage, if you're jamming the receivers, that's giving the linemen enough time to get to the quarterback, because the quarterback's going to have to hold the ball a little bit longer. I'm a Giants fan. I've been a Giants fan since 82.
Every defensive coordinator we had was very aggressive. He don't send no pressure or nothing. Everything is played on a – this. They want to keep everything in front of them. And that's what's getting us burnt. That's what I think.
Well,
I
Ray John, I agree with you. I think that there was some inconsistency throughout the course of the season in terms of them jamming wide receivers at the line. I think it got better once they got back from the bye. You saw in the Packers game, for example, they really challenged the Green Bay receiving core. That's why Aaron Rodgers had such a difficult time. However,
and the Saints wide receivers,
true,
for that matter.
Drew Brees, too. He had a
Did
lot of time gaining some consistency.
Did you see that Atlanta game? Did you see that Atlanta game?
Well, remember that, but they were without Prince Amukamara in that game. Keep that in mind. They didn't have their full force of weapons for that contest, Rajon. You need to take that into consideration.
Yeah, and Rajon, it's pretty scary. Do you really want to have Jerron Hosley, a rookie, bump and running Roddy White or Julio Jones? That's a 50-yard okay, pass downfield waiting to happen.
A lot of times in the year when we did have all our players, he didn't send no pressure or nothing. Even in the beginning of the season, the players themselves said, yeah, we're going to give up a lot, but we're going to keep everything in front of us.
Rajon, last year, the Giants, and please disagree with me if you think I'm wrong, but last year, did the Giants not win the Super Bowl by playing coverage in the defensive backfield and relying on your four defensive linemen to get to the quarterback? Last year, they were able to get there. This year, they couldn't.
I'm gonna be perfectly honest. Even last year, I was fed up with
okay.
with Barry Field.
That's fair.
I'm keeping real. He's not a good coordinator. I'm sorry. Like, you know what I'm saying? He gives up too much. He don't send no pressure. And we get beat because of it. And then they make it look like we got bad players. There's no way in the world you got JPP, Justin Tuck, and Osei, plus Q Nuka. They don't know how to work with people. Think about when we had John Fox. Think about when we had the guy that came out of John Fox.
Spags, you're talking about?
Spagnuolo.
Yeah.
Think about when we had Spagnuolo. Spagnuolo showed you what to do with having all them players like that. Perry Field don't know what to do.
Well,
he don't know what to do, man. He don't know how to utilize what he got. We got a lot of talent, man, on that D-line. You know what I'm saying? You got to know how to use them right.
Yeah, but those guys, but Rajon, those guys to me, and thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Thanks for the passion. Thanks for giving us a call. Call back anytime. Eventually, your guys got to make some plays here.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't press and you don't send a lot of blitzes, that's fine. But eventually, can JPP beat the tackle in front of him? Can Justin Tuck beat the guy in front of him? Can OC get around the edge and make a play? I think in the last 7 or 8 games, those guys combined for about 3 sacks. I have to update that stat. I don't really know what it is, but I know there was about 6 straight games they had 2 sacks combined between the 3. Whatever
think,
the case
yeah,
might
two
be.
2 or 2.5.
It's not good, all right? These guys got to make some plays. I don't care what your coordinator is going to do. If your best players do not make plays, whether on the defensive line or, frankly, at the cornerback position, take your pick. You can get on both of them. It's a symbiotic relationship. If one does poorly, the other one does poorly, and it works both ways. The defensive backs looked a lot worse this year, because the defensive line didn't put any pressure on the quarterback. And I think, to a certain extent, Rajon is right. You didn't pressure the wide receivers quite as much. Quite frankly, in my opinion, it's probably because Perry Fuel didn't have full confidence that his guys could stay with some of the best wide receivers in the league playing that press coverage. And therefore, the defensive line numbers are down because quarterbacks can get rid of the ball quicker. So it goes both ways. But to me, the biggest problem with this Giants defense this year, the best players simply didn't make the plays they needed to make.
Final 7 games, Jason Pierre-Paul didn't have 1 sack. All of his sacks came in the first half of the season. So that's a telling number right there. And, you know, you mentioned, John, getting back to the talent. And Rajon listed all of those talented defensive linemen, all of those big names. Let's not forget, they were all on the roster that won the Super Bowl. So that's why you need to step back and say it's combination of scheme, but it's also the talent not delivering. And what I mean by that is guys winning their individual battles. That was a huge contributing factor as to why the sacks did not pile up. If you're telling me that less than a year ago, the OCs of the world, the JPPs, the Justin Tucks, the Mathias Kiwanukas were able to get to Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady consistently throughout the postseason, Matt Ryan as well, and then that group is back again under the same defensive coordinator, and it's all on the scheme alone, I find tremendous difficulty in believing that. It's clearly also the individuals not rising to the occasion and winning their battles. And that was a big contributing factor throughout the course of the season, why the pass rush was so inconsistent. JPP was seeing double teams this year. He was seeing chop blocks. and he could not overcome some of those obstacles. And also, OC and Justin Tuck couldn't take advantage of maybe some of their favorable matchups as a result. You add all of that up, it's very hard to have a consistent pass rush.
And I want to throw this out there, though, too. I mean, we've had talent come in and out of here and change over the last 3 years, but Chris Canty, Ancho Roll, the 3-4 pass rushers that Rajon mentioned, Corey Webster, Kenny Phillips. This talent's been the same the last 3 years. So the Giants have been ranked in the bottom 20% of the league in every one of those years, more or less, give or take a spot here or there, in terms of yards allowed per game. So, you know, you say all these guys are super talented, and that's great. If all these guys were really that talented, would you be ranked in the bottom 20% of defense each year? And, plus, let me go back a little further here to 2009. Perry Fuel wasn't hired until 2010. In 2009, the Giants' defensive coordinator was Bill Sheridan. Now, Bill Sheridan obviously lost his job after one year here with the New York Football Giants. In 2009, and again, the talent has really changed a lot between now and then, so it's hard to really make that comparison. They were 19th in the league that year in terms of yards per game. In terms of points, they were a lot worse. But that was one of the years Eli had a lot of turnovers, I think, and that turned to a lot of points for the opposition.
25 picks, yeah.
I think that was 2009, if I recall. I'll have to double-check that.
It was 2010,
that was
actually.
10,
yeah,
right?
It was 10.
That was 10. I thought that was 10. So that being said, they gave a ton of points that year, a lot of big plays. But if over the course of 4 seasons, all right, and 2 different defensive coordinators, your total defense in terms of yards per game is in the bottom third of the league, I don't know if I buy that's coaching. I don't know if I buy that. You know, don't you have to look at the guys that are filling out your defense and filling out your roster and saying, maybe some of these guys aren't quite as good as we think? You know, to me, something like that can't be just as simple as play calling. It has to go back down to the personnel.
And they were good in terms of points given up this season.
Right.
They were rather high. It was almost like a bend-but-don't-break defense.
Which is what Perry Fuel did have in Buffalo, for that matter.
He was a very opportunistic defensive coordinator. He tried to get those interceptions and those turnovers to stack up. As a result, you give up a lot of yards. Now, that's a fair criticism if somebody wants to also call in and say, you know, maybe he takes too many chances. That's fine. I'll buy that because that's been his track record dating back to Buffalo. But the turnovers are piling up early in the season. Nobody seemed to be complaining about that.
And once the turnovers disappeared, that's when the defense really took a turn for the worse.
And that's why I've been saying all season long, you know, it was nice and comfortable to cover up some of the issues, such as giving up a lot of yards. And then when the turnovers are not there, now your defense needs to stop an offense from going 70 to 80 yards. Can you do that consistently? Clearly the answer was no.
No
question.
That was
a big issue for the Giants.
And I think that's one of the reasons their points allowed was so low. A, because of the turnovers. B, the Giants did do a pretty good job protecting the ball on offense this year. They finished, I think, plus 12 over the course of the entire season, which is a very good number. And when you're not giving the opposing team really good field position, which for the most part this year, in my opinion, the Giants didn't, except for a couple of those games at the end of the season, your defense is going to look a lot better, too.
I'm actually bringing up the giveaways and takeaways this season. The Giants, in terms of their ranking in the NFC, were third. It was plus 14.
NFC or NFL?
This is just the NFC. This is based on ESPN's rankings. In terms of the Giants' takeaways, they had 21 interceptions this season, 14 fumbles, so 35 turnovers that they forced. Then giveaways, Manning 15 picks and 6 fumbles, so 21 total giveaways.
Just over 1 a game, which isn't bad.
I mean, plus 14 is a very good position to be in
at the
end of the season. There's nothing to complain about that.
In fact, I guarantee you the 2 teams ahead of the Giants in the plus-minus were playoff teams, right?
One of the two. The Redskins were right in front of them
at
number 2.
What was the other team?
The Bears were number 1 because they got off to such that hot start. Now,
they won 10 games, though.
In the AFC, Patriots were number 1 in the NFL this season, plus 25.
Right.
Then the difference between the one and the first and the second team, rather, in the AFC, huge differential. The Texans were plus 12.
But look at the top 4 teams, New England, Houston, Baltimore, Cleveland, all on the plus side of the turnover ratio, all playoff teams. And when you get down to it, that's really a big part of it. For the Giants to be plus 12 and not make the playoffs, that's not a great sign. Not a great sign. And, yeah, I know you could coach turnovers on defense and things of that nature. You can make some plays. But a lot of times, too, turnovers have something to do with luck and fortune. As we saw with Eli's bad 2009 season with all those picks, they came on deflected passes, things of that nature. I had some bad luck that year. But this year, you're plus 12 and you still don't make the playoffs. Not a great sign.
And that was the biggest difference between last year's playoff run and this year. You know, they were getting turnovers last year, but they were also making defensive stops, John. It wasn't as if offenses were going up against the Giants and racking up 350 to 400 yards.
And I think there was a huge difference, too, with this defense this year, Lance. They played a lot better when they had a lead. When this offense gave that defense a lead to play with, and then they were able to bring the extra pressure, you're able to do more things. You have a larger margin for error. All those things put together, this Giants defense played much better with the lead than they played from behind. Because remember, we talk about all this stuff with the defense. It still comes down to being able to stop the run. This team could not stop the run, so when other teams got leads against the Giants, guess what? They ran the ball. They pounded it. Short passing game. All of a sudden, they're not putting the ball in harm's way. They're not throwing it as much. The turnovers disappear, and the Giants have trouble getting stops. When you get a lead early, especially a couple-score lead, teams can't run the ball and be patient like they would if they were ahead. And that really, I think, is something the coaching staff is going to have to look at in this offseason, getting this defense better when they're playing from behind and not necessarily playing from ahead. And that just comes down to me to stopping the run.
There were just four games in my mind in which the Giants jumped right out of the gate, set the tempo early, and were able to ride that momentum. It was basically the Carolina game, the second Dallas game, though that's the exception basically because they wound up blowing that big lead.
Yep.
Even after they jumped out to a huge advantage.
And a Dez Bryant fingernail was always a difference between a win or a loss there.
Correct. The Packers game, they rode that whole
and
momentum.
The Saints
and well, I was going to say the Eagles game too, so I even forgot about the Saints.
Well,
because
you know what?
The Saints was somewhat contested early on.
It was 14-14, I think, in the second quarter of that game, if I recall properly. But yes, I would say those four or five games were the games where they played well early and then basically rode that success throughout the entire game.
14-13 game for the Saints in the second quarter. So that was pretty tight until the Giants broke things open on special teams. But you're right. You know, you get off to a strong start, you're able to give your defense a big boost, and they know that they're not going to have to stay on the field very long because they have some flexibility. Perry Fuel can change the scheme a little. He could take some more chances. It really changes the whole momentum swing of a contest when your offense performs at a high level very early on. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. We go to Andrew in Virginia. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I think you made some really great points just now about the defense. And one of the intangibles that seems to be out there that I've noticed over the years is that the offense isn't really performing. Like, you know, you were saying they're not out for that lead. The defense somehow doesn't have that confidence, or they can't sustain some kind of confidence to keep everybody in the game. And it's one of those things where it's like if the offense doesn't perform, then why should the defense have to? And I've noticed that at times. You know, only a couple of times has the defense been really dominant, you know, Packers, San Francisco. But other than those few times, and the Eagles game that finished up the season, but other than those few times, you know, it's really like if the offense can't get down the field, you know, we're not going to sustain our confidence. And, you know, all of a sudden the Giants are behind and there's no way to get back into the game.
And I think that's a great point, Andrew, because you can look top to bottom at this schedule, and you're right. Normally, if your offense struggles, not only can you at least turn to your defense, Andrew, but you can at least turn to your special teams to maybe give you some type of spark, maybe some type of lift. And there were times where two of the three facets of this football team, each contest, didn't show up or were very inconsistent.
And I think the point that Andrew's making, it's a good one, is that you could almost classify this defensive unit as front runners. When things go really well, they're able to build on that and continue to play well. But if they start off poorly and they start making mistakes and they don't do so earlier in the game, they seem to have trouble turning that around and making things right.
And that's something that, it's happened for a long time. In 2009, it was like that. If there was one little mistake, you know, Manningham fumbles down in the red zone, and all of a sudden the game is out of reach for this defense, and it's like we totally collapse. So it's not a new phenomenon. I mean, I've noticed it for a long time in certain spots. But the real point that I wanted to call in and make today was you know, I've been tweeting you guys forever, and you guys always get back to me and acknowledge me on the air, and I appreciate that. Lane said something last week that I really wanted to touch on.
Sure.
Which was the running backs and the use of the running backs and fullbacks in the passing game. Now, we all know what the problem was on offense. Eli had a kind of an off year, and one of the reasons is because Nix was injured, and they're doubling, you know, Cruz, and Bennett is a new guy, and he wasn't quite all the way on the same page with him. So our offense was sputtering at times.
Yep.
But if that's the case, Lance made the brilliant point. Well, they had 90 throws to their backs last year. And how many did we have this year? 50. It's almost half. So my point is, if you know that, and you know your offense is sputtering and you need to start throwing some quick throws, short, high percentage passes, why aren't you checking it down? And some of it's Eli, and some of it was the scheme. And now we have David Wilson, who can catch the ball really well. We've got Bradshaw, who's always been able to catch the ball really well and make good yards. And we've got, you know, maybe Andre Brown coming back. We've got another guy that can catch. Why aren't we relying on our offense to stretch this defense out like we did last year? And we saw it. You've never seen a more dynamic offense from the Giants under Coughlin than last year down the stretch. Why can't we get back to doing that? I don't understand the backslide.
Yeah, Andrew, I would stop short of referring to Lance's point as being brilliant, but I think it was solid in that the Giants did have a lack of checkdowns this year. And I think it comes down to the fact that after having so much success with those big plays down the field last year, to a large extent, the offense and, quite frankly, to me, more than the coordinator, the quarterback, became very wrapped up, especially earlier in the season, in trying to get the ball down the field on every play. And once Akeem Nix hurt his knee and he wasn't the same player, and Victor Cruz is getting double-teamed, you have to look elsewhere. Just go back to the Super Bowl last year and that great job NFL Films did capturing Bill Belichick on the sidelines. This is a Victor Cruz and Akeem Nix game. Make Ballard beat you. Make Manningham beat you. And I think that's the tact teams took this year. And quite frankly, I think Eli Manning and the Giants offense had trouble adjusting to what the defenses were doing, trying to take away the Giants' two biggest weapons. And you're right, going to the backs, and quite frankly, going to Martellus Bennett more, in my opinion, who was open a lot in that short area in the middle of the field, would have helped this offense an awful lot.
Yeah, and you know, adjusting, it's easy to say, well, you got to adjust. And, you know, that's why, I think that, in my opinion, that's why, frankly, I love the offense, and I love Gilbert, and I love what he and Eli have done. That's where that criticism comes from fans that call in and say, well, Gilbride's got to go. I don't think he's got to go. I love what he and Eli and Coughlin have built here. I've never been more impressed with our offense when it's firing on all cylinders. But when it's not, you know, and I don't want a ding and dunk offense. One of the great things about Eli in this offense is, yeah, the progression is to Nix and Cruz first, and then number four is the check down. But sometimes you have to recognize, you know, if the number one's not there, I got to check it down. I just got to get the chains moving. And he did that last year. He did that. He dumped it off to Ahmad Bradshaw in that Eagles game and put the game away. And it was really like, yes, we have this confidence. You know, we are totally stretching you out. You can't cover all of our weapons. And I didn't see that this year. And last year we had our guys healthy. This year we had injured guys. I don't understand the decision-making when you know your biggest two weapons are being doubled and they're injured and you can't adjust. I just, you know, it's so easy to say. I realize how hard it is to do, but that's what needed to happen and it didn't happen. And, you know, the line between 11 and 5 and 9 and 7 was really thin this year. Razor thin.
Yep. Yeah.
I look forward to next year. I look forward to another training camp, and I really want to see Wilson become that number two guy because he's so you can tell already he's going to be that versatile guy that can catch out of the backfield, and he gets downfield quickly.
Yep.
I mean, he can go for 50 yards. He could be our version of
LeSean McCoy,
Chicago running back there.
Matt Forte.
He is our Matt Forte. He can be that kind of guy. I don't. And Eli is never going to over depend on him. So it's not going to be a dink and dunk type offense. But we can really stretch defenses out if they start making, you know, decisions and adjusting when they need to. And that's, you know, again, hard to do. But I hope the Giants figure it out.
All right, Andrew.
Thanks so much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
I think he's right on the money on a lot of those points, to be honest with you. Look, David Wilson, coming out of college, there was a hit on him that he wasn't such a great receiver coming out of the backfield. Well, we did see at the end of the year, really, on a couple of those wheel routes, he made some nice plays catching the ball down the field. And I know he said he could be the number two guy next year. To me, Wilson's the number one guy. He's going to get the most touches, the most carries, and you can use him in the passing game for sure. But getting back to his criticism of Kevin Gilbride, he said it himself. The checkdowns are there. The third and fourth progressions for Eli Manning are short passes to Bennett, short passes to running backs out of the backfield. The same way, same playbook, they were there last year. So is that on the offensive coordinator? Or is that on the quarterback simply not reading the defense properly, seeing the field well enough, and simply willing to accept the small defeat in terms of not being able to get the ball to his one or two options, Nix or Cruz, on any given play, and be willing to take that six-yard gain to Bennett. Be willing to take that four-yard gain to David Wilson, or maybe breaks the tackle or two and makes a big play. To me, that's on the coordinator, because those options are there in every single play. It's up to the quarterback to make the decisions and read the defense properly so he gets to those progressions.
And the fact that Manning is given so much flexibility within this offense, that's surprising, John, that he wouldn't more often than not say to himself, you know what, it's not necessary for me to press the envelope, and I don't need to go for the flashy play, even though it's been successful in years prior. Let's dump it off. And I thought they came right out of the bye. And remember that screenplay to Ahmad Bradshaw, and it was like, wow, this is a little new wrinkle. This is something that they had done last year. We hadn't seen it much in 2012.
Worked
to perfection.
Right?
It was against the Packers, that big Ahmad Bradshaw.
Well, remember, the Packers and Saints are two teams that bring a lot of pressure. They blitz a lot, so they're susceptible to plays like that with the screen, but then it just simply disappeared out of the playbook.
And that's what was so mind-boggling down the stretch. They had those new plays and new little wrinkles that they threw in, and it seemed that they experimented over the course of that two-week bye, and then they just got away from it.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at last year's numbers, as Andrew threw out, the 90-50 disparity in terms of the what the running backs caught in 2011 compared to 2012. In 2011, Bradshaw was the leading receiver among the running backs. He had 34 receptions. And then you had DJ Ware at 27. Now, it is too easy, John, to say the absence of DJ Ware is why the running backs didn't catch as many receptions.
Yeah,
this
I'd
year.
Say
Am
that.
I right?
Li- I'd say that'd be a little easy, yes.
So you can't say, well, they didn't have the personnel in place for them not to succeed in
they
that catch.
I mean, how many catches did DJ Ware get last year, though, on that little bubble screen when he was lined up in the slot of wide receiver? He caught probably about 10 or 12 of those balls on that play alone.
And they also struggled to execute on that play more often than not.
Sometimes too. They did, but why not try to use David Wilson in that situation? Get him out in some space. Let him try to make a play.
And maybe that was just because they felt that they wanted to be more patient with Wilson and they didn't want to just say, you know what, this is our playbook and we're going to throw you in. Whether they're wrong or right, I mean, 2020 is hindsight, but the latter part of the season, as Andrew touched on and you did, you know, clearly Wilson showed signs that they can throw him out into the flat. He can make catches and get him into open space and really use his legs as a weapon to create issues for the opposition. That Eagles game, Bradshaw and Wilson both had a lot of one-on-one matchups against the linebackers, and either Gilbride and Manning saw that and said, you know what, we could take full advantage of this throughout the course of the four quarters, and they did.
We'll get to our final call in a second and wrap up the show, but Mike Farmer sends in a tweet. Why, and I think he's referring to me, why I'm so ready to give up on Bradshaw as a number one running back. It's not that I don't think he has the skills to be a number one running back. I don't think his body can stand up to getting, even quite frankly, 15 touches a game. Because that's what he was getting this year, more or less. And it was, you know, more than that at times. He was getting in the 20 range for about 3 or 4 weeks in a row. And that's when he started to break down. I don't think he physically can handle that many touches over the course of a game. And quite frankly, he didn't look like the same back the last 5 weeks of the year with all those injuries. Not through no fault of his own. He was banged up. Legitimate injuries. And David Wilson, in my opinion, can simply get more carries and be healthier and be more effective with more touches. He's a first-round pick. Now, I want to bring Bradshaw back. I think he can play an important role on third down as a pass protector, run some draws, run some screens, and you can still run him in a lot of traditional offense. Get him 8 to 10 touches a game, maybe even up to 12 on some games if you want. Give, you know, David Wilson 15 to 18, something like that. And you have a 1A, 1B running back situation the same way you had it with Jacobs and Bradshaw. I just don't think with Bradshaw's feet and his legs, Lance, he can handle a large bulk of the carries.
Well, and Andre Brown's injury contributed to that, John. The timing was no coincidence. They basically coincided with one another. So I think that if we were able to see the three-headed monster fully healthy throughout the course of the season, Bradshaw may not be in the position where they needed to lean on him for 15 to 20 carries.
And I think that three-headed monster will work well next year.
And I'd like to see them make sure that they could try to bring back all three, because I think it's a perfect balance. You have Brown in the goal line situation. You can have Wilson as you envisioned as your first and second down back, and Bradshaw as your third down back, where you can run the draws and you can also use him as a passing running back. So they all bring something different to the table. It's just a matter of, will the finances all line up for them to allow them to bring them all back? Let's go back to the lines. We've got Larry in New Jersey. Larry, what's happening?
How are you, fellas? I was just enjoying the conversation with that last caller talking about our backs going out for passes. I would love to see David Wilson go out for long passes, try to stretch that defense, but I think one of the problems, they try to keep their backs in for protection to protect Eli Manning.
Very good point.
And they could drizzle out to the left or to the right and catch short passes and maybe break a long one. But seeing Wilson going downfield, that offensive line is going to have to hold up. But that would be a tremendous weapon if you could use it once or twice a game, even to show it would open up a lot of the defense.
Yeah, Larry, no question. I don't even think you frankly need to throw it to Wilson down the field. If you can get him in some space on some little circle routes, some wheel routes, some quick screens, some traditional running back screens, some bubble screens, let him run with the ball. Let him use his natural given ability. Let him use his skills and his running ability to get yards after the catch. You have guys that can get deep with Nix, Randall, and Cruz. Let Wilson be that check down guy and turn what would be a 2 or 3 yard catch into a 12-yard catch. Think of that Ray Rice play. With 4th and 27, they throw a little 5-yard dump off, and he uses his skill and ability to run the ball for a first down for 27 yards. That's the type of play where I could see David Wilson being very effective out of the backfield as a receiver.
And, of course, with that happening, you're going to open up everything downfield.
No question.
Because now the safeties have to watch Wilson coming up. The linebackers have to watch. And it's got to open up holes, not only for Nix and for Cruz, but for the tight end, Marcellus Bennett. It's got to be really open this offense up next year with a little tweaking here and there. But the question I really wanted to ask you, I know you got to go, what is the Giants with surgery coming up? I heard that Canty injured a knee, Bass was playing injured, Snee had a hip problem. Are these players looking at surgery, and will they be ready for camp?
You know what? The Giants didn't make any announcements in regards to information on who's getting off-season surgery. You might have some cleanup procedures here and there. That tends to happen every year, bone fragments, bone chips, you know, the Bridgmans, things like that. But as far as I understand it, Larry, there are no major off-season surgeries that are going to happen that would keep any of these guys out for the off-season program. We're talking about some sprains here, some strains, things like that. From what I hear, and again, things happen, new news comes out, but from what I hear, most of these guys should be okay for the off-season training program when the guys come back here in April.
Yeah, you want everything going well. You hate to hear an injury in May, June, July, like Nick's. I think Nick was hurt in May in the minicamp.
His foot, yeah.
Yeah, that is when he hurt his foot. He broke his foot, and that put a pall on his career, his year. He was never bounced back from that foot and the knee. So we're just wondering what kind of surgery we're looking at. How bad is it? Doesn't look like we're going to have anybody having really major surgery coming up in the next month or so.
Which is certainly a positive. And Larry, thanks so much for the phone call. And with respect to Akeem Nix, he had mentioned, because reporters had asked him after the season, does he need surgery? And right now they said that they're just going to use rest to hopefully get him back to full health so that he could go.
Which implies that it's not a whatever knee ligament issue he had, it's not a tear. But if you have a tear, you generally have to have surgery to get that corrected.
And real quickly, before we wrap up the show, something that I don't think has been talked a lot about throughout the course of this season, the wide receivers, and this is maybe why the running game struggled a bit, and this is piggybacking off of Larry's point, why they needed the running backs to stay back in pass protection. The wide receivers have been so critical in years past in helping with blocking up the field to get that running game going. And we talk so much about how Hakeem Nicks's injury affected the offense.
He was a great blocker.
When you have a knee injury and a foot injury, John, you're not getting as much push off the line with
that's
those
fair.
Corners. You're not getting much leverage up the field. So that's another little facet there that, you know, also not just hurt the receiving game, but hurt the running game
and
overall.
And if you want to watch some game film or game tape of what teams' wide receivers know how to block, watch the Redskins. Those wide receivers on the Redskins.
Especially.
And Hankerson, who's another big guy that plays wide receiver. Two big guys that push opposing cornerbacks down the field. Now, the Seahawks have two very big, strong corners. They had some issues doing that against Seattle in the playoffs. But you watch that Cowboys game in the final regular season contest on Sunday night, they were pushing Carr, they were pushing Claiborne down the field on those more sweeps, those more stretch plays, and on the Robert Griffin III options when he kept the football. And you're right, that could have been a big factor this year.
You get a lot of holes up the field that way, so that's crucial. And
that's how you make big plays.
That was a big missing link this season, and we saw that at times throughout the course of prior years. And, you know, you have that missing element. That's a big reason, in addition to the offensive woes with respect to the offensive line, why the running game just wasn't able to click week in and week out. All right, that'll wrap up today's version of Big Blue Kickoff. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls and everybody chiming in on our question of the show.
Great work.
So we hope to see this type of effort in the days coming and the weeks coming.
Well, we have to come up with questions that are just as good, too.
Well, check out the Facebook page and the Twitter page. We'll make sure that we get word out to you before we go on the air each and every morning, 9:30 to 10:30. So you can chime in at hashtag Giants Chat. You can also give us a ring, 201-939-4513. John, been fun as always.
A pleasure, my friend. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9:30. We're going to try to get somebody to come on to talk some NFL coaching carousel and maybe some NFL playoffs as well.
Sounds good. For John Schmoke, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one.